It's because you guys are watching. Anyway, welcome to another episode of Final Cut Grill. I'm sitting here with the meerkat running, and it's making me nervous, and this is my third take. I usually only do this in one take. Hey, so we're back from NAB. I say we like there's somebody in my pocket, and I spent the whole week with the FCP Works crew and in their presentation suite next to the Las Vegas Convention Center. And I got to say, I had a great time. It was really an honor to be one of the voices of FCP Works. And I got to say, you know, it's very interesting when you partake in something like this, we're literally like, I am there and I could deep six the entire thing for them. They open up a mic and I get to talk and there's people in the room and, you know, they're recording it and sure they could cut it out, but it would cause a bunch of extra work. They were amazingly generous with their trust. Let me put it that way. They were, everybody at FCP Works was amazingly generous with their trust. They never once told me what to say. They never once told me, you know, what the message was. I mean, it was kind of understood. Our whole thing was that we want to show Final Cut 10 as the edit system of the future. And the implication is that FCP Works are the people to talk to if you want to implement the edit system of the future. And so that was really sort of the underlying message. And at the same time, we had such great content coming out of our suite that we literally had people approaching us saying, oh my goodness, you guys should be charging for this. I mean, they were really solid work study lectures. Some of it was just like, hey, look, we got a new camera. But most of it was really amazing content in terms of how to work better with this tool that we all choose to use. And, you know, it's funny, you know, we asked people to register to be a part of the events. And we did. And there was one guy that I couldn't help but notice because he came walking. He was very kind of fashion conscious, I'll say, but he had these little tiny peg leg pants on that I looked at him. I go, how the hell do you get your foot through that thing? And he kept showing up and I, you know, after a couple of sessions, I go, hey, what's your name? It's Todd. And then I noticed like some images were popping up on the web and I couldn't tell exactly who they were. And then I put two and two together and I had talked about this beforehand. If you're going to come up and approach me at an event, tell me what your Twitter handle is because I don't necessarily connect faces with Twitter names. And so I realized, you know, like not until today, this is Saturday after NAB. Oh, one edit a day is Todd. So his Twitter handle is one edit a day. And we talk about that in the thing. And Todd's from Santa Cruz and he was like a stalker. I mean, this guy was there every single day, for most of the day. And so afterwards I was like, you know, I'd like to talk to him and see what his take was because obviously he was sitting there. He was taking notes. He was participating in the conversations. And, he even showed up at the DCC meetup. We had drinks, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning at the Cosmopolitan. So it was great to meet people and it was great to connect with people. And as it turns out, Todd is really excited and very passionate about Final Cut 10 and what it means for his business. And this is the classic thing. There are some people that get it. And there's some people that are just like, oh yeah, it's not for me. It's not professional. It's like, ah, shut up. You know, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. So anyway, we're going to talk with Todd. But before we get to Todd, I want to thank the people at Premium Beat, for helping to, you know, pay the way for Alex and I to be able to actually go to, NAB. So that was awesome that they would, pitch in for that and that they support this podcast because I think this is really important that we have, Todd is actually listening in while I'm recording this. He's back at home. Anyway, hey, Todd. He's listening in on Meerkat. But it's really important that it's wonderful that Premium Beat sees that shows like this are worth supporting. And I appreciate them to no end. And everybody there have been so generous. And I implore you, if you have not heard of Premium Beat, go check them out. Premiumbeat.com. And I think thanks to me, premiumbeats.com. I think they had to add the second URL because I kept saying it wrong. Maybe they had it beforehand, But their music is curated. It's the good stuff. It's easy to find good things. And I'll give you a pointer and a tip if you haven't heard me say this. In the new version of premiumbeat.com, you can have multiple playlists. I have my Fen playlist, and it has music that I dig and that I know that I want to cut to. And a lot of times when I'm doing music searches with producers, they'll go, I don't like that. And I go, really? I like that. And I'll actually shove that over into my playlist. And recently I had to cut a couple of pieces for a client, and I got to be the one to cut to choose the music. And I immediately went to my playlist because I know what kind of music is in there. So I'm curating the curated music. So anyway, check out premiumbeat.com. The prices are reasonable. The licensing is simple. The music is high quality and wonderful and awesome in every way. So, if you haven't checked them out, you're doing yourself a disservice. So I just meerkatted that commercial, and now we're sitting here in front of Adobe Audition because that's what I use to record the show. And we're going to go to Daniel Ray Todd Villegas in Santa Cruz, California, and we're going to hear his take on what the FCP Works Suite was all about. Todd, we just got back from Las Vegas.
We did.
And we were both – I was actually sequestered in the FCPX work booth.
I chose to be sequestered in the FCPX booth.
And you apparently voluntarily put you through it.
Yeah, totally worth it though, by the way. Have you seen though? Did you get to have a chance to go on the floor? It was like drones everywhere. So
now drones like people, mindless people or helicopters?
I don't mean the salespeople. I mean actual physical drones.
No, I did not. Although somebody else did say that the other day, like
oh
just
God.
Helicopters everywhere. So you spent most of your time voluntarily at the yes. FCP Works booth.
Sure.
And in general, that was, you know, I had described it in some of the videos there that it was kind of like the epicenter of knowledge of Final Cut 10 and the new 10.2 release. What was your overall take from the whole thing?
Huh. Well, let me give you a little tiny bit of a backstory. Just like sure. I've been in FCPX for quite a while, since 10.1. So out of film school, it's been a few years now. I remember 10.1 came out. I'd been a 7 editor for a while, worked on documentaries with 7, or might have been 6.5 at the time, or 4.5 HD, or one of those darn alliterations of Final Cut. And so there was a YouTube guy. His name was Greg Sparrow, and he decided that he had a competition for $1,000 for a music video that he wanted for a jazz song. So not a lot of jazz song options out there for music videos. And so friend of mine, name is Teresa Chu, and we put together, she's a great videographer, and we put together in 24 hours what we thought was a decent version of a music video. Now, for whatever reason, we decided to do it all in 10. I'm like, yeah, 10's out. It was like 10.1 at the 10.01 at the time. So really early version of a 10. It had only been out for just a few months.
Yeah, that's very early.
Oh my God. Talk about disaster central. It was the worst experience as far as from an editing point of view ever. But we, you know, it's weird. Fast forward, we won that contest, and so you go on YouTube, you look up this gentleman's name, Greg Sparrow, and you look up his competition. You will find our video up there. I don't know if that's what you should judge me on as an editor, but that was the very first thing that I've ever put together in 10, and we won a freaking $1,000 from it. So that's not too shabby.
So you paid for the software three times over with your
exactly. That's funny. Exactly. Yeah.
So you've been doing it from the
very early on. Yeah.
But you also mentioned the other stuff. So you went to film school. Is that correct?
I did.
Where did you do that?
As a mixture, I was at USC for a period of time, but I graduated from UC Santa Cruz, UCSC, up here in Santa Cruz, where I currently live now. Actually,
what caused you to move to Santa Cruz?
Well, if anyone that's been here has a chance to go by Westcliff or the beach or pretty much anywhere around here. Some people say it's a little hippie central, but that's okay. We're by the beach basically. We're in an area that's just extreme. It has the number one air quality in the country. I had asthma when I used to live in LA. I'm from LA originally, and so I used to have asthma. I don't remember having that out here. I have my dog's name is Apple, by the way. So me, Apple, my girlfriend, we live out here because I think it's you can now. You can live wherever you want. If you're an editor, you work in media. If you choose to live wherever you want, that's where I live. It was funny. After during NAB, I think I split a cab with an NBC executive. And you know, I was telling you the story about On Meerkat earlier, but the gentleman was just complaining about the weather. He's like, it's terrible, and just drudging away. I think he was actually like a vice president of something. I don't even know how many vice presidents they have, but he's a vice president of something. And he was just talking about living in New York and what a mess it was right now currently in the weather-wise. And I felt horrible. I was like, oh yeah, it must be terrible. And I'm, you know, it was like 65 all last week, and maybe in the high 70s when it gets really hot, kind of thing. So yeah. So yeah. So that's I guess that's my reason for living out here.
Okay, so you choose it for the weather, quite simply.
Yeah, I mean, we're close enough to San Francisco, close enough to San Jose. So you have, you know, you got Evernote and Dropbox. Well, not Dropbox, but you have all the tech companies going on just about a few miles north of me. So a lot of our customers are from there. And I can live here because we can, pretty much.
Very cool. Okay, so film school, Santa Cruz, and what type of work are you currently doing? I think everybody who listens to this show is always, you know, trying to figure out the person who's talking. Are they like me? Are they not like me? Sure. Should I listen to them or not? What kind of work do you do, Nick?
Sure. So when it comes to the actual work that comes out of the actual Santa Cruz area, I like to always joke that we deal in the hippie healthcare industry. So we have a lot of clients that do a lot of conscious mindfulness, things like meditations, educational, healthcare. Whenever I try to explain it to people, I was like, oh, it sounds kind of a hippie, hipstery type of vibe. There's a gentleman I have right now. His name is Lee Holden. He was on the PBS for a while, I believe. And he does something called Qigong. And he has a whole entire workout series currently right now. And Qigong, spelled with Q-I, G-O-N-G. And it's very much like Tai Chi. My partner, she's Chinese American, and she always makes fun of it. She always calls it. My grandmother does that stuff. She says it's a Chinese air, right? I'm like, yes, it's Chinese air. But anyway, so that's my current project. But he has a long series that he's producing right now that I'm working on. I've worked independently for a lot of the tech companies up in San Jose and in San Francisco. But I mean, as far as what the actual industry out here is, that's a big part of it. Then there's just a lot of local businesses that have a lot of local needs, and whether that's promotion for the city. I'm currently working for another organization called Boldly Me. They're out of Fremont area. They're a nonprofit, and we're doing a whole thing for their dinner coming up in a few months. Or I'm sorry, in a few weeks now. So I mean, it does vary quite a lot. And actually, it's kind of the main reason why I was there with SCP Works and at NAB is that a lot of my friends that had started off as film majors, they leave. They were film majors. They were all excited. They were all excited to produce something, to edit something, to create something. All of them had these big aspirations for creating a production company. And they go there. They move to LA. They bust their ass working diners, working Applebee's, working wherever. And their side job was as a colorist. Side job was as an editor, or a lot of times just as a PA. And what ends up happening? They have no job after like, you know, a one or two little freebie deals. They are dead tired, and then their dad offers them some position at like at some accounting firm, and he's like, okay, yeah, all right, I'll do that. And then you fast forward, and they're no longer interested in film. They don't have that creative spirit anymore. And so I'm just trying to kind of recollect a lot of these like just kind of out of film school kids that are that are close to making the edge, jumping off that edge there. And so that's kind of why I was over there at the SCP Work Suite, just kind of soaking as much as possible, because I know it's possible. You know, Mike. I don't want to take over this whole thing, but you know, Mike Masdorf, he's just during one of the sessions, he says something like, "Someone says, so what do you think about Avid?" And you know, he's like, "Well, for myself, he's like, I'm kind of over it. I'm over all the extra loops and extra steps I have to take in order to get this edit done. Like, I was with a professional company, and we got it. We got in a film with Will Smith. We were sitting there in our production truck. We had Velcro strapped to the walls. You know, this kind of stuff. And he says, you know, but we edited the whole thing in Final Cut. It was you hear it actually the actual editor." Talk about it. They talked about the entire process, and they loved it. They loved the entire process. Now you have something like with Philip Hodges, his Lumberjack. You can think about the options for that for the producer's point of view.
Right.
Like I don't know why people aren't in editing in Final Cut. I get all jazzed up because I'm like, why do you have this huge industry that hears this amazing this stuff that's like, oh, that sounds innovative. Yeah, no, that's not really for us.
Yeah, I think what we're looking at, and this is, you know, this is this is standard. I mean, I've been doing this a bit longer than you. And what you find in this industry is that people are drawn like a moth to a flame to their comfort zone.
Sure.
And people don't like learning new stuff. It's a pain. There's one guy I know who is a local editor in the San Francisco area. And he's a younger guy. I mean, I say younger, he's probably, I guess this guy is like mid 30s, early 30s, something like that. Maybe a little older, but not much.
Sure.
And he came to video editing from a different background. He came from the music industry. Somewhere along the way, he realized, you know, making money as, you know, a musician was tough. I should look into something else. He took a few classes. He realized he was good at this. He learned Final Cut Classic. And now, you know, just like his musical instrument that he learned, which has not changed for thousands of years. That'll give you a hint what instrument he plays.
Sure.
The Final Cut, I think somewhere in his mind, he sort of assumed that Final Cut 7 would never change for thousands of years. And so here's a guy I know who I highly admire as an editor. I think he's a great cutter. He has a great musical sense, and he cuts like a musician cuts, which is good. You know, oddly enough, most of the people that I work with on a day-to-day basis, from managers to producers to other editors in our office, are all musicians, and most of them are drummers. You know,
because of beat. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. So if you think about it, there's a lot of rhythm and you know, whatnot in cutting. So I think that people are drawn to a comfort zone. And I think that you know, part of the reason why I wanted to do this podcast is to have conversations away from the anger and the rhetoric and the excitement, one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And just purely talk about, you know, the feature set, and purely talk about, you know, the advantages and disadvantages, because, you know, I think there are some disadvantages in Final Cut 10. None of them affect me. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's important that you look at those things. And I think that, you know, the rest of the world does not want to just be pounded over the head. But to a certain degree, sometimes they need to be a little bit. You made it to the DCC meetup, correct?
I did.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw the conversation that I had with, I feel bad because I forgot his name already, but it was like Jim or Brian or Bill or, but he was a guy from somewhere ever, and he had 6 edit suites that he was responsible for, and he was the boss.
Oh, really? Okay.
And his decision would affect all the editors in his company. And he said to me, you know, and he was there because he listens to Digital Cinema Cafe, not so much that he listened to The Grill, although he did say, I did listen to a couple episodes and yeah, it's not for me.
Yeah, I wonder why.
And I said, well, why is that? And he goes, well, you know, if I had moved to Final Cut 10 in the beginning, Final Cut 10 would have killed my business. My business would have died. I said, okay, well, that's 4 years ago.
Sure.
Have you looked at it lately? Because, and we talk about this all the time on the show, that from 10.1.2 on, in my opinion, Final Cut 10 is awesome. And, you know, now we have 10.2. We'll talk about it in a second. But,
sure.
But, you know, I got pretty passionate with this guy, and I told him, I said, you know, you don't, if you're curious about switching, and at the point where I started talking to him, he wasn't even curious.
Oh, by the way, anyone that's listening to this, I watched this actually take place, and it took place. Was that about half an hour, Chris? Would you say?
I would say at least a half hour. I was in this guy's face. Yeah,
he literally means in his face. Chris is no joke. He was sitting there at the top, at this third floor of the Cosmopolitan Mall, yeah. As a Cosmo, next to the pool table, shared over pizza and possibly a beer. I don't. He wasn't drinking or anything, and so really, really, really passionate about the power of switching his edit suite over to Final Cut.
But still, I realized, you know, that he had his reasons, and that's mm-hmm. okay that he had those reasons. And it may very well be that what he is currently doing, and I don't even remember what he's probably on Premiere or whatever, you know, maybe that's going to be fine for him. But as you and I both know, and we'll get to this, there are, you know, workflow advancements in Final Cut 10 that are solving problems that we're not even, that most editors aren't even acknowledging exist. Right. You know,
exactly. Yes,
that's and right. so I pounded on this guy for a long, long time
sure.
About why he should change and why he should at least consider changing. And I think the thing that was the most interesting was that, and I'm trying to find a letter that I wrote just recently. And I'm going to read it to you. I said to him, I said, you know, if you're going to think about changing, what you should do is shoot a bunch of stuff of your kids on your iPhone. Cut that in Final Cut 10 at home. Don't bring it to the office. Play with it. Experiment. Listen to a few episodes of this show. And when you decide, this is actually really fast, then pick one of your editors and say, hey, I want you to try something.
Sure.
Talk that person into it. And when you get the consensus of one other editor, then present it to the rest of them. And I even said to him, I said, and I know I have his card someplace, so I apologize that I didn't do my research. And I don't know your name if you're listening to this. But maybe I'll name the episode that. So if he goes to look at the show, he'll go, oh, wait, maybe I should listen to this one that's named after me.
Sure, sure.
But I said, you know, when you come to the consensus that you're interested in Final Cut 10, and you get somebody else on board, it will be much easier. And I think that where we are at, and this is what happened with Focus, where we are at with Final Cut 10 is more and more people from all levels of the production community, the highest level of producers and directors down to even assistant editors, are starting to see, oh my goodness, I could save time and therefore money using this. I mean, the producers pushed for using Final Cut 10 because they knew it, they understood it, and they knew that they would save time doing the movie Focus. I'm talking about, I think I skipped over that in that last sentence.
A little bit.
But they knew that they would be able to save time and money if they were cutting in something that was more modern, that was designed for workflows of the 21st century. And there's a lot of people that think that, no, you know, hey, dude, I got this. I know exactly what I'm doing. You know, this is how it's done. It's like, okay. You know, you keep riding your horse, I'm going to get in a car. So anyway, at the end of that, exchange with the gentleman at the DCC meetup on Tuesday night, I wrote a letter, and I'm going to just read this. Actually, let me change the width of this column so it's a little easier to read, and zoom in on this screen. So I wrote this to a couple of very high level people at Apple in the Pro Apps department, and I won't even tell you who they are.
Oh,
I said Tuesday night at 11:59 p.m. we had a Digital Cinema Cafe meetup at the Cosmopolitan Hotel, and at the event, a gentleman approached me and told me that he had listened to a couple of episodes of The Grill, but wasn't convinced. He expressed all of the standard concerns that we hear over and over, saying things like, his business would have gone under had he jumped to 10.0. I proceeded to spend about a half an hour very passionately explaining to him a way that he could experiment with Final Cut 10 and then slowly make a transition in his business that has 6 edit suites. At the end of the half hour, he finally agreed that he would give it a try. And you were there.
He was like, I'm not even remotely interested.
At the end of the half hour, he finally agreed that he would give it a try. During the entire conversation, two Apple employees, to remain nameless, were standing about 3 feet away listening to everything. You'd be very proud of them. They stood there, they listened, and they kept their mouths shut. Yeah. Mainly because, you know, Apple employees they're sort of trained to not engage the public and things like that.
Sure.
Anyway, the next morning I sent this letter to the two of them, the two Apple employees, asking them to talk to you guys, meaning these high-level managers at Apple. Not you specifically, but to basically pass on a message to the entire Final Cut team, Final Cut / Motion team. This is the letter that I sent to them. Okay, so this is a letter within a letter within a letter in a podcast.
Sure.
And I wrote, excuse me, I didn't write the cough. Please report back to Willy Wonka inside the chocolate factory about how hard I went to bat for you guys with that guy last night.
Sure.
He's going to start using Final Cut 10.
Oh, really?
And when he does, he's going to learn about how damn hard all of you are working each and every day to bring to market the most advanced and smart editing platform on the planet. He will never know all of you by name, but he will experience what the end result of passionate creative energy is and begin to understand how much of your lives you've poured into the application that I've chosen to hang my livelihood on.
Wow.
Keep up the good work. Don't ever give up. Be diligent and precise in all that you do. And for God's sake, please give me the damn remove attributes already.
Yeah, same here. That's really, really strong.
It's interesting. And so you say, you know, why won't people do this? It seems so logical. And the bottom line is that the bigger the company, the bigger the ship, the harder it is to steer.
Sure.
It's easier for you who's working primarily by yourself. Say, yeah, I just want to work fast. Boom, done. Well,
because I've edited in Avid, I've edited in Premiere, and maybe it was rocky early on, but even early on, just like things like the Skimmer and the way Compound Clips kind of function, and once they introduced multicam, the way those three things were like heavy hitters for just how quickly and how easily you can make an edit, get an idea to paper, you know, control D, you know, select all, control D, you know, of something, throw it all out there, and now you have all these extra apps out there and developers. You have Philip Hodgetts, you have the guys over at over at the Color Finale. You guys over at Color Finale. You have Denver Riddle. You have help me out with the Slice. You have the SliceX and TrackX team.
Cormelt.
Yep. Cormelt, thank you. Whip some more out there, Chris.
There's plenty of stuff.
Right, I agree. Right. And so you have these things, and you have this community that's kind of like, here, you guys need more tools? Okay, it's not all coming from one. From here, but here we have all these extra tools that we're going to help create, make this community, make this family of editors stronger. And I don't, as much as I can edit just fine in these other avenues, I don't see that same type of passion coming from the ground up like I do with Final Cut.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that that you need to look at in any sort of ecosystem, and you know, the Final Cut 10 world is an ecosystem, is that there's a point where an application grows in strength and popularity to the point where it is advantageous to outside developers to get in and develop for that community. And what we have seen is that Final Cut 10 has been adopted so broadly, although not vocally, but
right.
Broadly,
sure,
that a lot of people are seeing it as a place to participate financially, and because of that, that's why we see features like, you know, Cormelt and FX Factory and Ripple Training and, you know, Color Finale. I mean, if you go to Denver Riddle's website, the primary focus of his site is Resolve. If you go to Color Grading Central, the primary focus of that site is selling a membership level that gets you into all of his Resolve training.
Right.
That's where that's the soul, if you will, of that site. And yet, if you look at the way he is promoting Color Finale, which is his new plugin that we did a whole, you know, session on, you realize that he sees that this thing has legs.
Sure.
And in the casual conversations, and I don't think I'm revealing anything of, you know, secret nature. Denver has said that, yeah, you know, it's going really well, and he's also out there. Do you have Color Finale?
I do.
Yeah, so you've gotten the Denver Riddle emails. Hey Todd, how's it going? I hope you're enjoying Color Finale. There's some new tutorials I want you to see. And you know, sure. I complimented him. I said, you know, dude, those emails are awesome. They're the tone of them is perfect. I know you're not writing me personally. I get, oh, I know you're using a big old email robot. But it's just the right level of personal and
he's not doing it to sell more stuff either necessarily.
He's just saying, look, there's more tutorials for it. Exactly. That's actually a really good point. I had not thought of that. It's not like, wow, you really like in Color Finale. Ugh. You should buy these LUTs or
I got this. You on my marketing list. Here's some more crap you should buy. Yeah, no, not at all.
I hadn't thought of that, Todd. That's really a good point. So anyway, that's the kind of community that we have here.
But real quick, you know, Philip said the same thing about his product. He was saying, you know, early on, they were thinking about these different ways of like, oh, we don't want people to use it on 25 mic machines and this kind of thing. He's like, you know what? No, whatever. Screw it. On Lumberjack, we're going to make it open so that you can have 10 copies of it running. And that's okay, because all we want to do is make it easy for you. And I'm thinking about that. I'm like, oh, if I had a big team. So I have another project I'm working on for this organization in Scotts Valley. And then they're ETR and Associates. And what they basically do, they're an education research company. And they recently have a study in which they have a lot of need for multicam. And they have 20 different cameras going off. They have multiple audio feeds for a project. I don't think I'm actually allowed to talk about what the project is. But the point is, I have really, 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 really had a hard time kind of selling Final Cut to them, because inside of their house, they use Premiere. They use Premiere on several of their machines, and they pay for that license. And they're like, okay, well, we have this thing. And when it comes to the editing of what they're going to need, they're going to need to have people, a lot of academics, go ahead and review this footage. And when I watched that thing at FCP Works with Philip, and he's talking about, hey, you can have multiple people watching what it is you're working on and have your edits ready to go by the time that you turn off that camera. I got home to my hotel room that night and wrote a big long email about why this combination will save them hours and hours and hours of work.
And to be clear, you're talking about Philip Hodgett. Talking about Lumberjack.
Sorry.
Correct.
That's right. Sorry about that.
So Lumberjack is just one of many side applications or, you know, utilities that you can use in conjunction with Final Cut that allows you to log footage while you are shooting in a very straightforward, simple way. And we won't get into all of that here, but, you know, maybe I should have Philip. I think Philip actually, you know, come to think of it, Philip, I think, has been on the show.
He has been, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and you know what was really interesting is
he talked about it being a hard sell. Do you remember that on the show? He talked about
it is a hard sell.
A hard sell, yeah.
It's a very difficult sell because it's really intelligent. And the vast majority of people just aren't. You know? They're just not. And it's a very...
Well, I don't think that's fair. I think it's like a lot of people can't see the big picture unless you kind of draw it out and draw out the details of what that big picture kind of involves. And so when you have a lot of these elements that aren't neatly packaged together necessarily, and you don't have a giant company that has, you know, like Avid's amazing in the sense that their support, they will take care of you because you're paying so much money for these systems. So if you have an issue with a piece of hardware, they will come and they'll take care of that kind of thing. They're not, but when it comes to Apple, it's a little bit of a disconnect for a lot of people. They're like, well, what's the number I call at Apple to help me fix my edit machine? And I'm like, there's Apple Care, but it doesn't necessarily address the inner workings of Final Cut. And so I think that there is a disconnect there between, and you look at Al Mooney and the Premiere gang. And, you know, quite honestly, this is where it kind of does hurt the Apple community in a sense, and that you don't have a voice saying, hey, look, we heard your features are coming out in a few months. We can't tell you, you know, you have a lot of the secrecy, and you always say the Oompa Loompa thing or the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory example that you give. And it's true. As an editor or someone that relies on this program for their livelihood, when you don't hear the exactly, like, we're going to be supporting this forever, it's not going to go away like Aperture. There's a little bit of discomfort when you don't know that's the case. So yeah. I mean that has been helpful for Apple as far as their innovation is concerned, but not necessarily so helpful when it comes to the Final Cut community and editing community, people that rely on an actual program for their livelihood necessarily, you know?
Right. So let's talk a little bit about 10.2.
Sure, let's do it.
So I was genuinely shocked at 9:01. when Monday morning, so we're going to start our sessions at like 10 o'clock or whatever, Monday morning. And everybody was giving me a hard time, like, oh, Fenwick knows, Fenwick has seen it. I had not seen it, okay? So genuinely, when we hit the download button at 9:01,
A new Nikon.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, crap, a new Icon. And I'm standing there with Mestman, Sam Mestman from FCP Works. And I said, can I take a picture of the Icon? And he's like, what? I go, I want to tweet it. I want to be the first one to tweet it. Oh, and he's like, oh, you nerd, fine. And so I, because he, Sam doesn't totally get Twitter. I mean, he gets it, but he's like not into it. So I like took a snap of it and I tweeted the thing. And then, and then we launched it. And when I saw 10.2, I was like, seriously, I'm shocked. Because I remember talking, I think I was talking with, I had some correspondence with, I believe, or at least I was reading along with Richard Taylor and with Alex Golner. And they were like, oh, 10.2 this, 10.2 that. I was like, nah, dude, it's not going to be 10.2. They got to go 10.15. You got to go 10.16. And so when it launched 10.12, I was kind of shocked. Okay, so then it launches and we start getting into it. And I'm realizing that the focus of what we're talking about is this damn 3D text.
Right.
So what did you think in general of, because you were there when the dude from Apple came and pitched. What did you think of his presentation?
Well, the presentation wise, I actually had, that's the only, you know what's funny? That's the one I did not see until I watched it. I did not see that directly. So,
you would got bored with us already?
No. I just got there a little late, a little coffee mishap. So, no, I didn't want to show up with coffee all over me from the cab. So, you let me know, actually. I mean, I know all the features about 10.2, but you know, maybe you let me know what that presentation was like.
Did you say you watched it online?
No, I did not.
Okay. Oh, actually, you can't watch it online because they wouldn't let us point cameras at him. Again, it's the secrecy. Yeah. Hey, we're going to make a big announcement, but we don't want you to videotape it, which is just absurd and ridiculous. And you know what? And I can say this stuff because Apple doesn't give me a penny and they could cut me off. If they wanted to quote unquote cut me off, they'd be cutting me off on a grand total of zero. But sure. Yeah, I think it's just stupid that they won't.
They can make all your copies of Final Cut go back to 10. I mean, go back to 7.
Yeah.
Or 10.0. Yeah, yeah, there you go. That's probably worse, actually. all your copies of Final Cut just go back to 10.0.
So I think that my initial take on it was pretty weak, okay?
Yeah.
It was pretty weak. But then I started to notice a few things that actually really excited me. Okay, so
two, by the way, as far as features are concerned.
Right, and I got to say that my favorite feature was the effects presets.
Sure, yes.
And I think I talked about that. Maybe you were in the room when I brought it up. But not only can you do video effects presets, but you can do audio effects presets.
Yeah, that's actually really nice, actually.
That's really cool because, you know, there's a lot of stuff. You know, I have a pretty, I'll say marginally strong audio background from, you know, college and, you know, before getting into video editing. And also, you know, other stuff, whatever. So I'm pretty particular about audio, and some of the things that I do are a little tweaky, you know, they're a little nerdy, and sometimes it's kind of hard to explain to the kind of entry-level junior editors, if you will, that we have around the office. But if I can just say here, when a guy's talking on camera, put this effect preset on him, and it'll gang the whole, you know, audio chain the way I want it to go. That to me is massive. And not only just for the kids, but just for me, because I don't have to, like, you know, add my channel EQ, add my gain, add my limiter, add my isotope denoiser, add my, you know, it's just like, no, bing, bonk, done. You know, and I think that's like a massive, massive thing, even though, you know, from a marketing standpoint, it's not like, hey, let's make a big bullet point and a banner and we'll hang it over the front door at Apple at NAB.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that is, from a marketing standpoint, you have to have things that are banner headlines. You have to have things that are, you know, go-to snazzy things. And,
sure.
And yet, for me as an editor, much of the stuff that I want is not something that you would make a bullet point out of.
Same here. Just to be the remove attributes, like you said before.
Exactly. Just give me the damn remove attributes.
And I feel you on that. There's so many projects I've had to work on, and thank God for a producer's assistant, because you can go in and you can find out which clips are actually have the effect you're looking for on it, and then you can manually go in and check them off. But you know, but yeah, something that simple can just make your life easier. And quite honestly, it's all about those little things that just make your life easier. That end up being the feature set that you're actually looking for, not some big glossy necessarily 3D text kind of thing.
Exactly. Actually, speaking of producer's best friend, wouldn't it be great if we could use the timeline index to show me all of the applied effects?
Apple listening, maybe.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? Kidding.
Sure. I mean, honestly, Apple Final Cut is a database. It's a database with a browser attached to it, and so you have this tool that's. I remember Sam said something like this. He said, you know, people are just starting to get some of like what this new update can do. Like, and this is such a little small. This is in a sense a smaller update. I mean, it's a big update, but it's a smaller update than, you know, adding multicam or adding another glossy feature is. And yet it brings some of these things that you can preset a bunch of big layered effect to a multitude of different clips that you have on your timeline, and that actually is extremely powerful when you start to go, okay, let me do this one blinket effect across the board, across to 100, 200, 10 clips, 20 clips, whatever, tweak a couple, change a couple, make a new preset, change that preset a little bit, do it again. You could have a very complex edit in a matter of half an hour where you don't without having an option like that, you couldn't. And every time there's been a big update, it's like, oh, you guys want to learn how to do something really fast? Here you go. Sorry, my little that was Apple in the background barking. she's a tiny chihuahua the size of a Labrador in her head anyways.
So I'm talking briefly to the people on Meerkat, and they're saying that the audio is cutting in and out, and I will look into that on a future broadcast. So I think those are some of the things. Now there's other stuff that I want to mention.
Yeah. I'm going to lower my levels down just a little bit just in case that's causing a problem.
Oh yeah. You're excited.
Oh yeah. So I am honestly, I've been listening to Grill for a while and been a Final Cut editor for a while. And every once in a while when you were on DCC, I had made some comment. I don't remember which episode. Let's just say 15 or something. And I said, like, you know, for a show about editing, boy, this show sure could use some edits. And you and Alex spent a few minutes talking about that. And I felt really bad. You're like, well, and Alex always makes fun of you, calling you the old man stories and this and that.
Right.
And so, yeah, I have a ton of energy just because I really am passionate about not just this program, but about just video creation in general. And so when you have a tool that's this powerful, it's kind of hard not to be. And so so sorry about that.
No problem at all. So getting back to 10.2, I think the other thing that we have to look forward to is that obviously when they were demoing the 3D text and you could see how fluidly it moved
right.
as they were, you know, changing it and whatnot let me see. It may be Chris's level sounds like it's peaking. So anyway, when they were demoing it, you could see that obviously there is an enormous amount of code that's going into making that as right. smooth as possible. All right. And I think that anything along those lines that optimizes code and optimizes the speed and makes the application snappier.
Sure.
We all live up, you know, we all benefit from that.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things that, you know, would say that people would say to me, and I'm might be, you know what, I'm sorry, but I did not sign anything about any of this.
Sure.
But in some of the kind of casual conversations I would have with some of the Apple people, I would say to them, I'd say, look, I'm up there. I get to talk. You're back here. You right. don't get to talk. Is there any like backstory message that you want to make sure gets out there? And one of the things that they would say, and it's kind of in the release notes, but one of the things that they would say was that a lot of work has gone into optimizing the code so it runs better.
Right.
And I, as you know, because we were on Meerkat for like 1,000 hours before we started this recording.
Yeah, no kidding.
I've been going around the office installing it on the machines, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it, to seeing how it runs. I will say that I think the 3D stuff steals processor cycles from your machine. And I'll only say this. I'm just going to say that I was screwing around with 3D text on my laptop. And I have the first generation Retina, so whatever, it's like 2012. And I like had a simple word, and I was just kind of doing the same things I saw Sam do in the demo a couple of times. And I tabbed over to messages, and I was chatting with a friend, and I noticed that it would type.
Okay, I think I got the point.
Slow, okay?
Sure.
And so I went over and I quit Final Cut, and immediately messages went like, oh yeah, hey, it's messages, let's type. So now I'm typing to you, my friend. So I do think that there is a lot of code that goes into doing that. And, you know, this machine only has like 16 gigs of RAM. It's not, you know, like a full pro super, super machine. Yeah, 16 gigs of RAM on a laptop. But I'm looking forward to, you know, playing around with it on the i5s and, or the 5Ks, i7s they are.
I'll tell you something. I have some friends that are software developers, and they have a very, like a rule of thumb in a sense. And they say that the easier something looks and the cleaner it works and the better and faster that it is, the more work that it took to actually get to that point.
Oh yeah.
And so, yeah, you see some of these extra feature sets and see how clean and easy something is, and the easier it is easier than last version. Yeah, it's usually because a crap load of work went into it.
Exactly. Now, I was going to launch open the App Store and see if I can see. Let's see. Installed updates in the last 30 days. Oh, here we go. More. Ah, release notes. Let me see if I can step through some of these release notes and see if I can comment on them specifically. Large collection of textiles. Yeah, yeah. Instantly convert any 2D titles. Oh, let's talk about the masking.
Oh, sure.
I think the masking is something that, again, not super sexy, but very useful. Extremely useful in that the fact that every filter, every effect that you apply to a video clip, if you hover your mouse over the little gray bar, you get a mask tool, just like you had in the old color board. You get a shape mask and a color mask, which is kind of crazy cool. I'm pretty sure I have that right.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, you have a shape and color mask.
So you can add a shape and or color mask. And if it works like it did in the old color board, you can have multiple shape masks that kind of gang together. I don't know if you realized that before, that you could do that before. Even though you had a color, a shape mask, you could click on that little icon again and add another one, even in 10.1.4. Did you know that?
Oh, sure. You can have multiple stacks of it.
Of the shape mask.
Yeah.
That's right. So I think the fact that there's color masking, that there's shape and color masks, is really powerful. So if you think about like what you can do with say color finale, you can add color finale to tweak out the sky, and then you can color mask it out to say, yeah, only screw with the sky. And then, you know, there's possibilities there that I think that
you add something like TrackX or SliceX to that mask, and then you can track that color change or that effect, whether it's a Gaussian blur or some kind of blur possibly, or I mean, like you said, a color change or whatnot. You can actually track that to your image.
Exactly. And so there's some incredible power there that is not fully realized, but it's not fully explored. I don't think we've fully explored the implications of what that really means. So I think that's giant and huge. Of course, there's always added camera support. AVC Ultra Codec family, XAVC, the JVC H.264 long GOP. And then they've also added GPU accelerated red code raw processing. And you couple that with a Mac Pro and dual GPUs, I think that's going to be really huge for people that are doing that 4K, 5K, 6K red stuff.
The motion integration is kind of cool. So if you're looking for like a future forward, like where are they going? Being able to work with, I mean, you can't do it yet, but you're starting to look at like, oh, maybe I can start to work with 3D objects inside my editor. Right now, it's just with titles. It feels kind of like the gateway drug kind of thing, like where they're starting off with titles, and pretty soon you should be able to. I'm guessing, I don't know if this is true, but being able to work with objects, kind of like MObject kind of did before.
Exactly.
So it's so funny. People talk about some of these features that are so crappy, but do you remember the first iPhone? I'm a super Apple fanboy, sure. So I had like every iPhone. Do you know what my favorite feature was for that thing?
The curved edges.
That was a great feature. No. Internally, internally.
No.
Go ahead. No, nothing? Okay. All right. It was the visual voicemail.
Oh, yeah. Giant.
Is that something you can put on a screen? Maybe, but you have to kind of wrap your head around what visual voicemail is. I'm like everybody, just a year before this, because everyone was just focused on there was no keyboard. Do you remember that was a real conversation? Where's my keyboard? I can't click on the buttons. I don't know. Where's my keyboard? And then people, some devices, they actually had the, it was when BlackBerry still was kind of big. But the visual voicemail saved me so much time. I wouldn't have to log in to something and click on the, you know, you have to like put in your password, checking voicemail. You hear that, like, you know, that you have to put in your password, press one to delete, press two to hear again. And you could never hear it again. By the time you press the button and got up to your ear fast enough, you'd miss a few seconds of conversation. What a pain in the ass. And so that visual voicemail was like this tiny little feature set from this phone that saved me so much time. And it's funny that wasn't really that advertised of a feature. And you look at some of these things that are that but what that end up turning into, and it's kind of turned into, is now you have an iPhone that's that not just has these other, excuse me, not now you have Final Cut that has it introduces titling. And you're syncing, and it introduces the ability to add multiple lights and cameras and tracking inside of motion. Well, just fast forward a little bit, pretty soon you should be able to do the same thing with actual real life objects. And so you're looking, a feature comes out, people were like, who wants 3D tracking? That was like from a few years ago, or excuse me, 3D titles. That's from a few years ago. I said, well, just give it a little time. I have a feeling there's some tricks and there's some surprises up Apple's sleeve.
Well, it was interesting. Somebody showed a pie graph, and I can't remember if it was Apple or if it was Sam or somebody, but somebody showed a pie graph that said that
Steve.
I believe 55 or 45% of Final Cut 10 users do all of their titling inside of Final Cut.
That's right. I remember that now.
Okay. Now, that's an interesting – I think that graphic was used as a justification for these 3D titles. And I think that if indeed that was the justification for putting all the time and energy into making 3D titles, I think it was a stupid justification because that's a really loaded statement, like all their titles in Final Cut Pro. I mean, what are you talking about? You're talking about lower thirds, you're talking about credit rolls, you're talking about opening title sequences. You know, it's a really loaded statement to say that that's a big deal. But I will say this about the 3D titles, and this really kind of bugged me. When the guy from Apple, and I feel really bad, and I'm really sorry, I can't remember your name. No, I can't remember his name. I'm really bad with names, so sorry, and I feel bad. But when he showed that piece, I asked him, what he did is he showed like a demo video that they made of a bunch of 3D titles like integrated into different scenes.
Okay.
And I said, can I have a copy of that? And he said, no. I said, why wouldn't you want to show that to anybody? He goes, you can't have it. I said, okay, that's kind of dumb, but come to think of it, Mr. Wonka, that's right up your alley. But it just, you know, kind of annoyed me.
Yeah,
but
the culture.
I will say that watching it inspired me. It inspired me to think of ways to use these really elegant looking titles. And I will say, hold on. Oh, my phone just rebooted. Holy crap. Anyway, I will say that the titles inspired me to think of ways that I could use these 3D titles in ways that I had not thought, it had not crossed my mind. You know?
Sure.
And so in that regard, I think it's kind of dumb that they wouldn't share it, but you know, in their infinite wisdom, they do not want to share this stuff with the public, which is, you know, kind of stupid. But and I think that when you that a lot of times you sort of need that kind of creative
the feedback. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. You need that sort of, you know, inspiration to say, oh, this is the way I can use this. Because a lot of times what's interesting, I talked with another guy and he's like on the engineering team and he goes, oh yeah, you know, I know how it all works. I don't know how to edit.
Hmm.
And he works for Apple.
Sure.
So
sure.
He's making a tool set. And that's not to say that there are not some brilliant editors there. I know there are.
There has to be, yeah.
But this particular guy is like, I don't edit. I don't do that. So, God, why is my phone all dying? but
engineer at Apple.
Yeah, exactly. So, and so it's interesting that sometimes a device or a thing or a tool or a feature is created. And it's not until you put it at the hands of a creative person that you begin to really see how that gets implemented,
sure,
and how it affects the industry,
sure.
And I think that the 3D title thing is kind of like that. I don't think we've really seen, we haven't. It's been out for what, a week now,
right?
I don't think we've seen how it's going to be used. I think that a lot of times it'll get used really ugly.
Yeah.
I think it will be very interesting. Now, there's another thing that I want to say, and this harkens toward the kind of a send to motion problem that we don't have a send to motion thing.
Right.
In that title demo, there was at least two shots, probably more, that were 3D tracked.
Uh-huh.
And so there was a shot where it was a racetrack and it was as if there was a camera in a car driving underneath the finish line.
Okay.
And there was a title in the sky. And as you drove underneath it, the perspective of it shifted.
Sure.
And I said to him, I said, well, where was that tracking done? He goes, in motion. I go, really? He says, yeah. I said, 3D tracking. Yeah. And I was like, how do I not know motion does this? How do I, the guy who does the Final Cut Pro podcast, not know that motion does 3D tracking? Why is that message not getting out more widely that I know it? And I think that that's one of the things that Apple fails in is that, you know, they have built a strong tool. And if it weren't for guys like, say, Sam Messman and Noah Kadner and Maria and all, the whole team at FCP Works.
Yeah, they're amazing over
and
there.
People like Philip Hodgetts and people, you know, I mean, all these outside vendors that are making these amazing tools, you know, Denver Riddle and whatnot, we wouldn't know this stuff because right. Apple just throws this thing. It's like they do? It's like they write this really great bit of code and then they put it in a bag and they put it on the curb out front and they hope somebody picks it up.
Gotcha, sure.
You know, and it's like you guys and here's the thing. I know these guys are really proud of their work.
Yeah, sure.
I know they're very excited about it. And I really wish Apple could talk about it and let us point cameras at them when they do. You know? You still there?
Yeah, I am. I was giving you the stage for a couple seconds. Yeah.
So anyway, I think that's in terms of what we have to see with these new shape masks and color masks for every effect. And I'll tell you the other one that sort of, you know, quietly excited me was the fact that now the color board is a standalone effect.
Okay, that's cool.
That's actually a really big deal if you think about it. Because before the color with the color board being hardwired into the effects chain after the effects, the broadcast safe generator was useless because you could put your broadcast safe thing on it
sure.
and then color board it into oblivion.
Right. Shift it up.
Yeah, not cool. So now you can put your broadcast safe after your color board, your color correction, whatever. Oh, and here's another thing I just want to say to all the Final Cut 10 editors out there. So it used to be that the little bouncing ball would always track which effect, which clip the currently open color board was dealing with. Okay, because it would move as it would update as you move from clip to clip. So if you're on a clip now that doesn't have any color correction on it, instead of digging through the effects tab to go add a color corrector, and instead of copying and pasting or whatever, the easiest way to add color, the color board to a clip, is just hit Command 6.
Change the color right from there. Is that right?
We'll see. Command 6 will invoke the color board, and in doing so, will add the color corrector filter to that clip. The minute you make one single tiny adjustment to the color board, it will leave that effect on that clip. So that's a little speed. That's a little speed trick.
Thanks, Sam. Trick. I just did that right now. It looks great. Okay, I see it. Yeah, color correction one, color board. Okay, cool.
You still can't. You still can't name the color boards, which would be nice.
No,
but I believe you can name the masks. Try that. I don't have it open.
Okay, I'm going to add a mask to this. Here's a shape mask. Add shape mask. Just whatever kind of mask. Okay. Yep. And I'm going to call it good mask. Even though it's not so great. You can definitely save it. You're good on that. Yeah, so you can save the name.
You can rename a mask, but not the color corrector 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. So anyway, that's actually a very cool little tidbit. And also a claim that there's a much better performance with the FX plugins.
You want to know what one of my favorites is? The little things they did was the smart collection. It's now libraries. But you can put it over the entire library, which is kind of nice.
Explain further what you mean.
Oh, sure. So before, when you had the smart collection, you'd be stuck to that with inside of the event. So if you're looking for a very specific clip, that's both that's you keyworded it with the word close up. You also have another keyword that has the word good take, and then you also had it as a favorite. Well, in your smart collections, it allows you to kind of take all these little data points and say, well, if you find a clip that is all this, show up in this bin. And this ability for filtering has been around in OS X since the last edition, not Yosemite, but the one before, where it allows you to tag in Mavericks, I believe. And so this idea of smart collections has been around for a little bit. So when they introduced it into Final Cut, it was good, but it would stick you into an event. So let's say you have a cool filter that finds all these close up. Favorited, keyworded pictures. I mean, excuse me, videos. Well, you'd be stuck inside one of your events. Now you can actually look at it throughout your entire library. So if you're working on a larger project and you want to find all the clips that are that these parameters, you can put it in your library and get it across all of your across all of these events. Boom.
Exactly, and I think that's a big deal that you can now search across multiple events.
Although it is one of those things where you're like, well, why wasn't that in there before? And I don't know if it has anything to do with this whole you talking to someone who's an engineer, who's not necessarily an editor, but that if there is a disconnect between those two different mindsets, when you introduce something like that, it's almost like, well, why wouldn't you have it set up so you could have it across the entire project that you're working on?
Another thing that they've done here is apparently that the GPU rendering when you send to compressor. Do you use compressor?
I do. Yeah, I do. You know what's great about compressor is it allows you to send out a bunch of different versions of something at the same time. So you need a web version, you need something to send your client, maybe you need a small, like something you can actually email out to, email review. I use compressor a lot, actually.
Do you send a compressor? What is that called when you do the share
droplets?
Menu?
Droplets?
Not droplets, but it's called like a package or something. You can send it right from the share menu in Final Cut 10. Do you do that, or do you...
No, I always do it within 10. A while back, Steve Martin, the Ripple training guys, they were talking about you should always do it. Yeah, it was Steve Martin. He has a training about this. You should always do it from inside Final Cut because it has to do with the rendering. The rendering time is saved inside of Final Cut. But if you go out of Final Cut and then rebring in your project from compressor, I'm not 100% sure on the wording of this, but basically in all essence, it's just going to be slower if you do it from straight from a compressor. But do it with inside Final Cut. your speed should be pretty darn quick, because it'll be able to use your optimized video. It'll be able to use whatever whatever cache settings are currently inside the Final Cut.
Very I think interesting.
I actually don't use compressor on a regular basis. We tend to take our full res Texas Master output. And we take those out because that is one of the deliverables we're going to probably need anyway.
Sure.
And then we make, you know, that becomes our master that we make everything from.
Did you have a chance to see the Frame.io, what they're doing in regards to having a compressor setting for Frame.io going right directly to the web and for client review? It's pretty impressive.
I didn't actually see that, but I had Emery Wells had invited me to check out Frame.io several months ago, actually. And I thought what he was doing was really impressive. So, and again, I haven't had a chance to see anything from NAB, but I know that they launched, they're real, and you can get it and use it. And I think it's one of the coolest things I've seen in a long time.
I talked to Emery for a while. He was saying that he actually, I don't know if he was the sole person that programmed it or basically doing the secondary part of it. But I mean, he too is one of these people that is just impassioned about doing stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're getting like these people that are not just programmers. They're not just there because they're filling some space and they've been contracted out to do some work. But you know, he's co-founder, if I'm not mistaken, and CEO of Frame.io. And I was talking to him on the floor over at NAB for, you know, maybe 10 to 15 minutes, and he gave me his time, and he could have been talking to someone that, you know, that's some bigwig somewhere else. And he was just kind of telling me that, you know, this took a lot of his like passion and time to kind of create this product.
Yeah.
And you know why he made it? Because it was a pain in the ass from the production side of things to have to deal with like 10 different products. You had like Dropbox mixed with some FTP server stuff, and then you have a an external compressor, and then you have some other different thing for client review, something else for notes. I mean, it just was a big mess. He's like, you know what? I'm going to build this tool because I love what I do, and I love this field, and that's what the product kind of came out of. And so I don't know, just kind of seeing that kind of passion amongst this entire community is kind of what inspired me in general, just to kind of continue along with Final Cut.
Yeah, no, I mean, clearly it is, you know, it's obviously my choice, and more and more we are beginning to see it is the choice of many more people. And I still, you know, Sam Messman and I have both been saying that 2015 is the year where freelancers start going, okay, maybe I should take a look at this.
Right.
And I will tell you right now, if you are a powerful Final Cut 10 user, and of course it helps if you know, you know, some motion and or After Effects, you can contact me. And if you live in the Bay Area, contact me. I might be able to find you some work.
I'll just say
that right now.
Oh, wow.
Hey, we should wrap this up. What's one last thing that you saw that as tiny a detail as you want, one last thing that you saw that excited you?
With the release or over at the SCP Works suite?
Anything from NAB.
Okay, can you give me a couple seconds on that?
I will tell you. I will tell you mine while you think of yours.
Sure.
There's a brand new update to the Core Melt TrackX and SliceX plugin. And if you don't know that, you really want to go to the Core Melt page and download it. It won't stomp over your serial or anything like that. So, you know, you don't have to worry about re-entering codes or anything. Just install it, and you're going to get some new features in there. Two of them that you're going to get is a trackable lens flare, which is quite cool. And it actually works very easily. I was able to track a lens flare to the headlight of a car in like, you know, a minute, I think. It worked very easy. And then there's another function inside the new Core Melt SliceX update that allows you to take something like Color Finale and track that to your video. So it's this little trick you do with an adjustment layer or something. I haven't totally looked into that, but if it's as easy as everything else I've ever done in Core Melt, I'm sure that's not hard either. So what's your pick from NAB?
I'm not
saying that has to necessarily be the biggest thing, but like
sure.
some little thing that you think somebody else is going to miss.
Okay, so I mean, I don't know about miss necessarily, but you and I were talking earlier about what Blackmagic kind of was producing on the floor.
Yes.
And so, I mean, it's kind of funny because it's almost, they have so many products out this session that it's almost hard to track like any of them. Because I'm wondering if that's them this quarter, and they had a huge space they took out on the floor. Did you actually visualize it? Did you actually get out there to the South Hall or North Hall or wherever they were?
Never once did I leave.
Enormous. They were, I don't want to say they were the biggest thing out there, but sure felt like it. They had like the biggest spot. And to me, it seems like they too are a company that, that is impassioned about making this stuff. And so in a weird way, they kind of just said, okay, community, you guys want some tools? Here's some tools. And they just threw out like every possible version of a camera. They made their Ursa Mini. They made their Ursa smaller. They've got a 4K, is that right? 4.6. They have a larger version of, the module for the, the larger Ursa.
The micro cinema camera.
Micro cinema camera for a less expensive version. They're kind of taking over, trying to go after the GoPro market, but with the better sensor. They had thrown out just so many different products that were like, maybe they had small, each of these had like a, it was like a niche market. Like, oh, we heard 20,000 people are interested in this idea. Okay, we're going to make a product for that. So, and it's kind of funny because they're out of, are they based out of San Francisco? Do you know?
I don't know where they're from. I don't think it's San Francisco.
Okay. Cause they have that San Francisco startup vibe in essence, like if that makes sense, like, we're going to just try to take over the market with this small little thing called Twitter. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of it before, but you know, you can only talk about in 160 characters, and if you guys are interested, whatever. And I think that they're kind of in this place where they're like, here, consumers, we're going to give you 20 different products, and next year we're going to give you 40, and we can come out with these ideas quickly. Maybe they're not all ready to go, so we'll update them in a few months with a software update, and a few months later with another software update. But they'll be in your hands. Start getting creative. Go out there and do something fun with them, and we'll be there to make more stuff next year. So I don't know. I like that vibe. I like this energy of like, we're just going to make a bunch of crap, and I hope some of them stick. We're gonna throw a bunch of spaghetti on the wall and hope some that we don't, it's not too many meatballs fall kind of thing.
Yeah, I think and my theory about Black Magic is just based on the presentation, and you could see the presentation on the SCP Works page somewhere. Is that they're almost using NAB for market research?
Yeah,
and I might catch hell for saying this, but it was almost as though that the woman that was doing the demo, like on a few occasions, she would say, and that's the new so-and-so and such-and-such. What do you think of that? You know, and it was almost like, it was almost like she was just trying to gauge, like, do people really want this or not?
You know, Google did that with the Google Glass. They had it out there for a while, then they're like, all right, we're kind of done with that experiment, so we're taking it back now.
Do you think that was an experiment?
I mean, kind of. I mean, I think it's just, I don't think that was their final, I don't think that was ever supposed to be their quote unquote final product, because I don't think the technology or battery technology is really there yet to have a wearable last all day. We're going to see with the Apple Watch, like if that'll even last an entire day. But I mean, you looked at the FCP Works guys, they were all using Blackmagic Studio cameras for that presentation. I think I could be wrong here, but I looked at some of the cameras that they were using there, and I think they were all the Blackmagic Studio camera.
Yes, they were. They were the studio cameras that look like they have an iPad glued to the back of them.
And those guys are no dummies. I have a feeling that they're using it for a very specific reason, because it's for bang for the buck kind of thing. That yep. Probably the best bet in town, and that had a good image. I mean, the puddings in the pie is wait. I think I'm screwing up metaphors over here. The puddings in the pie. No, but I mean, not trying to metaphor. But if you go ahead and take a look at their videos online, I have a feeling that they all looked really good, and they were able to put together this thing very quickly. And
the lighting was pretty low, but
right.
They use the Blackmagic Studio Camera called. Yeah, the one that looks like it has an iPad on the back.
Yeah, I remember that.
But anyway, so that's our NAB 2015 meltdown, as it were, sure. from a decidedly Final Cut 10 background, whatever.
Sure.
And Todd, I want to thank you for taking the time to
– Hey, thanks, Ben.
to be a part of this. If people wanted to follow you online, how would they find you?
Sure. They can go to the production company that I've been part of, which is NOK Productions, NOKProductions.com, where you can find Teresa Chu and my work on there. But if you're looking for me on Twitter, you can go to One Edit A Day, O-N-E-E-D-I-T-A-D-A-Y.
And what is the origin of that phrase?
Okay, so I think I'm going to change this name because I don't know if you look at it, it reminds me of the Oneaters. Do you remember that? Anyways, One Edit A Day, there's two E's in there next to each other. It doesn't help. One Edit A Day keeps the doctor away, that kind of thing. That was the original idea. And I don't know if it's so strong, so I think it needs to change, actually. But for now, it's still going to be One Edit A Day is what it's going
to
be.
Apparently, according to Alex McLean, who recently changed his Twitter handle, you can change both the display name and the at name and still retain all your followers.
Oh, okay. Well, that's going to happen then very soon now. I did not know that. I was afraid to change it.
I'm pretty sure you can do that. Yeah, you might want to look into that before you start deleting stuff.
Do you remember that thing you do? That thing you do with – do you know the movie That Thing You Do?
Yeah.
Okay. So they were called the Oneaters. Do you remember the Wonders? Yes.
The
one. So every time I use the One Edit A Day now, it's like, so it looks like I need it a day. I'm like, oh no, this is not gonna fly very well. So I think I now am gonna take a page from Alex McLean and change my Twitter name. Yeah. But for now, if you're looking for me, it's One Edit A Day or NOK Productions, and you can find some good stuff on there. And if you're in the Santa Cruz area, come by the beach, you'll see me there too.
Cool. All right, Todd. Take care, and we will speak more later.
Hasta pasta.
So anyway, that was Todd from San Diego. Todd, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. I really do. I want to say that, you know, there are plenty of people to talk to coming up post-NAB. And one of the most interesting was a guy I talked to, and he has one edit suite. He has one desk. And he caught me in between sessions. He's like, how do I grow my business? And we're going to do that in an upcoming episode, and it's going to be really interesting because, you know, we at Slice here, we're probably, I don't know, 5-6 years ahead of where he is. And so I think that our technical setup will offer some good insight to him and how to grow a business, especially, you know, a small post-production business, and that's going to be in an upcoming episode. We're also going to do I think I've spoken with everybody that I want to get on board. I want to get Dean. I want to get Vid. I want to get, I always draw a blank. There's Scott Simmons and also, doggone it. Anyway, there's a fourth guy in London and I can't remember it and I'm so sorry. Anyway, I'm going to get all four of these guys and we're going to have a music video. Thomas Grove Carter. So Thomas, Vid, Dean and Scott Simmons, and we're going to talk about how to do music videos and how these guys do it and what their workflow is. So I think that'd be awesome. And we're going to do it on Google Hangout like we did episode 100. And I might even have those guys, you know, call up their bins and whatnot and show how they organize stuff. So anyway, that'll be in an upcoming episode as well. So we're excited to be here post NAB 2015. So much stuff to learn. I'm also going to get Sam Nesbitt on again. And I think after this Wednesday, you know what? I'm going to say this. If you're in the LA area and you can get to, how does he say it? Lacey Pug, the Los Angeles Cutters user group or something, whatever it's called. If you can get to that this Wednesday, is it 18, 19, 20, 21, 18, tomorrow's the 19th, 20, 21, the 22nd. If you can get to the Lacey Pug event on the 22nd of April, go. Because Sam is going to debut a new product. Yes, a product. And it's going to blow minds, okay? So please go. If you're in LA, go to the user group thing. Sam Espin is speaking. And he's going to debut a new product. And I think he's going to kind of rock the universe a little bit. So go check that out. And after he debuts that, I'm going to have him on the show and we're going to talk all about his new product that he's going to be selling. Smart dude, Sam Messman, one of the biggest brains in the Final Cut 10 community. So that'll be coming up soon. Sorry, this episode is long, but
you know, Todd and I just kind of rambled on about, you know, stuff that we saw and insights that we had to, and it'd be 2015. Anyway, we'll be back next time with another episode of The Grill. Later, later.